save the earth.
The Green Divas.
With style and mirth.
The Green Divas.
Got your every need.
The Green Divas.
To keep you healthy and green.
The Green Divas.
They got green dudes too.
The Green Divas.
With more green news, you got to believe us. Listen to the Green Divas. Green Divas Radio Show.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. You're on with the Green Divas. Welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. I'm Green Diva Meg.
And I'm Green Diva Lynn. Peace out.
Peace out. Woo. Yeah, well,
I'm in the cold Midwest, and you're in the
sauna.
I'm
in the
sauna.
It's sauna
of the weather between our two places could be so extreme
right
now.
Kind of interesting. Well, that's what we get for having this virtual world where you're in Chicago and I'm here and like, wow.
Yeah, you're complaining about the heat. I'm complaining about the cold, dreary weather over here.
Yeah, we could use a little of that.
We do have a post about how people talk about the weather on our website.
It's pretty funny.
A lot of weather quotes. It's kind of a cool post. You got to check it out.
I think 9 out of 10 openings, we discuss the weather.
Yeah.
Honest to God, I don't know. What
good
are we?
Icebreaker.
What are we, British?
I do have a quarter English in me.
Yeah, I have a bunch of that too, actually.
Yeah.
So this is a very busy and interesting show this week. We talked to our features with a woman named Mitch Hedlund, which is funny because Lynn thought she was a guy and she said, you know, whatever. It never occurred to any of us that she was a woman.
Right. Yeah, she's the founder of Recycle Across America and Recycle Across the World, I guess.
Well,
nonprofit organizations.
It's a great idea, and what she's trying to do with this organization and through this organization is create standards for recycling so that there are standard icons across. So, because you know how confusing it is, and you and I even had this confusion in Chicago on our last trip.
Right.
That
there was no labeling going on there.
Well, there was that.
In certain places, which will
remain nameless. Yeah. We've already given them a hard time.
Yeah, you can listen to our last episode for that.
But it is often very confusing. You're like, okay. And like you go to Whole Foods and there's the compostable and then there's the trash and then there's the recycle. Anyway, so, and they've got a campaign with some wonderful celebrities who we hope to talk to that are helping to do PSAs to, you know, just help us all understand because there's a lot of recycling not going on.
Right, or wrong recycling. Their hashtag is recycle right.
Yes, wrong recycling. No, wrong recycle. So then we have, I love this woman's name, Lorianne Bird.
Mm-hmm.
And she is the environmental health person for
Center for Biological Diversity.
Thank you very much. And, you know, so we did a really fun wildlife segment with her talking about genetically engineered crops and their effect on us, but primarily on wildlife, of course.
And butterflies, which, you know.
It's sad. We talked to Green Dude Greg Kleiner about his really, really great book, Please Don't Paint Our Planet Pink, which I can't recommend enough for children and adults. Hello. But it says
the whole point is if CO2 was pink, more people would take notice of it.
Well, that's the thing. CO2 is invisible, so we're like, whatever, can't see it. It's not there.
Yeah, unlike the ozone hole.
Yeah. So
I almost said ozone ho.
That ozone
L came in. It was like, oh no, it's ozone hole, not ozone ho.
Wait, you know that ozone ho? Gosh darn her! That's actually funny.
Oh my gosh,
we're having too much fun.
There might be a post in the making on that one.
Then we have a sponsored post this week with a really interesting business called Shoplet.com, and they do all kinds of business products. But wait till you hear their commitment to sustainability and how many products they have. I mean, 100,000 products that are green and greener. And they have a really cool program where they are planting trees every time you check out when you go shopping there online. So listen
to... When you check out the hoe?
When you check out the hoe. Oh, my God. Anyway, forgive us.
Sorry about that.
Tony Ellison, who is the CEO that we do this segment with. So anyway, and then you're going to be busy with floor tonight.
Yes, I am. I will not be laying on the floor. I will be.
Then I'd have to call you a hoe.
Right. Where's this going? Yeah, I'm going. It's an event. It's going on across the nation. They're having at all their locations a design contest, and the company name is Floor, F-L-O-R. So I'll be at their Chicago location today, which by the time you hear this, it'll be over, but there will be other design events. And I get to design my own rug, and they're going to make it for me. It's going to be made out of recycled materials.
I can't wait.
I can't wait. I hope that I don't design a crappy one.
That's funny. Why would you ever think you would design? You're a good designer. And, you know, I missed the one in New York here. And Robin Wilson, who's a wonderful environmentally friendly designer, will be there too.
Yeah, she has a book that came out, so I'll get to meet her.
And we've interviewed her before, so we've got to get her back. And
yeah,
with all that, we've got to sign off because we're, you know, we got a big show here.
We're busy green diva hoes.
Don't be a green diva hoe. No. Oh my God, cut me off. What is that? Have fun, folks. Stay tuned for some really good stuff.
Every Green Diva needs a sidekick. At the Green Divas radio show, they're called Green Dudes. Time now for a deeper shade of green from a guy's perspective.
Wow, I am like so in love with this children's book called Please Don't Paint Our Planet Pink. And I'm very happy to be speaking today to the author, Greg Kleiner. Hi, Greg.
Hello, Meg. Thank you.
Yeah, I know we've been trying to connect, so I'm really happy we made it happen. And this book is so clever. And I love, you know, you have a great Bill McKibben quote on the cover, of course, you know, and if people don't know the founder of 350.org, go check it out. He says, I've often wondered what would happen if CO2 were visible. Now I know. So talk to us a little bit about your inspiration to do this book and what the story is really about.
Well, okay, yeah, it's, you know, the inspiration really was, I think, my two children who are going to inherit the climate in whatever state it's in.
Right.
And that was keeping me up nights and worrying me, and what can I do as a writer to contribute in some way to the climate change situation. So I decided to write this story that imagines what if carbon dioxide were pink? What if it were a shade of pink that we could see? We would see it puffing out of factories. It's making all the stuff we buy, and out behind our cars and buses and even above the butts of cows.
Yeah, right. But, the methane, yeah.
Right. And I just wondered what would, you know, it would be real different. The problem with carbon dioxide and climate change is we can't really see it. It's not tangible until we start feeling the impacts of drought and rising oceans and things like this. But how can we visualize it in advance so we can take action? And I decided to target it towards children, but the book really resonates with adults as well. And adults who have read it have told me, well, I learned something there as well.
Oh, absolutely. So, and I love on the cover, like the sort of subhead, whatever, is a story for children and their adults.
Yes, right.
Yeah, and tell me why you chose the color pink, just out of curiosity.
You know, people ask me that, and some people say, oh, that's not a great color because it represents, you know, the cancer battles, which is fine. The pink just came partly for the alliteration, planet and pink.
Yeah.
But it also, there's a gender stereotyping thread that's very subtle and mostly for adults who read the book that flows through this, about the father asking his son at one point, you know, why don't men wear more pink? Why is that color so
right
only for women and girls?
Right.
And so that kind of is this little sub thread running through the short.
That's
book.
Funny. My husband, who's, you know, very macho, he looks so good in a pink button-down Oxford. And it took me a while to get him, like, comfortable with wearing it because, you know, it's kind of funny.
Yeah, it's such a stereotypical thing, cultural, really.
Yeah.
When I read from the book, I wear a pair of pink suspenders and a pink tie and the green goggles.
Well, it's also a little bit, how do I put it? It feels non-threatening. You know, if it were brown, it would just be like, ew, ugly and scary. You know what I mean? Like, this is sort of a non-threatening way to describe to children what this really is. Like, let's not be, you know, too doomsday about it, but here you go. This is what it is.
Yeah, and that was a challenge with the book, because you want with children especially, and this book is really geared for maybe 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, someone in that range of kids. It's not for tiny kids.
Yeah.
But how do you present enough of the science, just enough to get them interested?
Yeah.
And there's some humor to get them engaged. And then storyline. So the father is trying to get the 9-year-old son to use his imagination to see this shade of pink that nobody can see, which confuses the little kid, but eventually he gets it. So it's you know, that balance of enough science, enough humor, then there's these gorgeous watercolor illustrations that a local unschooled artist did, Laurel Thompson, who did a great job.
Oh, I love her work, and I love this book. It really is for everyone, and I'm really grateful to have my hands on one. And I know we had a few that we were going to try to give away during our campaign, and I think I'm going to, you know, kind of read one. My grandson's 5 and he's very precocious, and he's very science oriented. He loves science, loves it.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to try it out on him.
Yeah, it's really ideal for an adult to read with a kid or a child, because then the discussion can ensue about carbon dioxide and where it comes from and how we're burning the stuff that's buried and all that. Pink might show up in their lives, so it's kind of fun in that way.
There's so many levels. It's just so clever and well done. And I'm really glad that you're doing that. Now, tell us quickly about your novel, because I'm kind of curious about that.
Oh, I wrote a novel a number of years ago now that is it's a story of a bunch of people, elders I call them, in their 70s and 80s, who move in together in a big old rambling house in a small town in Oregon to avoid going into the nursing home. So they rally together and kind of live it up in their late years. It's a lot of fun as well, but also takes on a serious issue of, you know, aging and death and dying and that sort of thing.
Wow.
So that's kind of at the opposite end of the spectrum. This one's for the smaller kids who are going to inherit the future that we've all created.
Well, it's kind of full circle, actually, and I all of it is very thoughtful. So I want to read your novel now. And can you tell folks where they can, where the best place to go find out about this book and other books are for
well,
viewers?
Well, you know, I always like to support the independent bookstores.
Yeah,
Most of them can order it. It's available through Partners West, a distributor, and various other places. It is available on Amazon, but I would sure encourage you to try your local bookseller first and have some order.
I love that. And the name again, and just in case you didn't write it down before, it's Please Don't Paint Our Planet Pink by Greg Kleiner. Thank you so much for calling, Greg, and I hope we get to talk again soon.
Thank you. I appreciate your time, Meg. Take care.
Want more information on this Green Dude segment and other ideas for low-stress green living? Go to thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.
Green Divas Heart Wildlife. Who can resist all those videos and images of adorable baby animals? But sometimes these adorable creatures really need our help. Let's celebrate wild animals, learn about them, and do what we can to help them. All right. I'm glad we're talking again to the Center for Biodiversity. This time we get a chance to talk to Lorianne Bird. And it isn't spelled bird, but I just think it's wonderfully, it's a wonderful last name for what she does. We're going to talk. She's the Environmental Health Director for the Center for Biodiversity. Hi, Lorianne.
Hi, Megan. How are you?
I'm good. And we're going to talk today a bit about genetically engineered crops and their effect on wildlife and what's happening. So, yeah, first I guess let's just give a little 101 on what genetically engineered crops are.
All right. Well, so genetically engineered crops are crops grown from seeds that have been genetically engineered, which means that the cell barrier of the seed, the cell barrier has been broken in order to create the new, a new organism. So a lot of people say, well, we've been engineering crops for millennia, which is true. We, you know, corn used to be a weed called teosinte, and we bred it, and we bred it, and bred it, and now we have, you know, delicious sweet corn with these fat, yummy kernels. So it's very different from traditional breeding in that it, you know, happens in a laboratory and involves the crossing of a cell barrier.
And it happens a lot faster than it would in evolution, which could take, you know, hundreds, thousands of years, right?
Right, although, you know, conventional crop breeding can happen really fast, too, and it is, you know, it's not necessarily, like, the most natural process in the world, but genetic engineering is a different and separate process. And I think one thing that's really important to understand is that we're always hearing from industry that genetic engineering and genetically engineered crops are essential to feed a hungry world. They're necessary in our fight to survive in an era of climate change. GE crops will be drought resistant. They'll help people overcome nutritional deficiencies and all these things.
Yeah.
And it might be true that somewhere in labs these kinds of crops might be being developed, but the reality on the ground is that five out of six acres of GE crops, 84% actually, so over 5 out of 6% of GE crops grown worldwide are engineered for herbicide tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
So herbicide tolerance is a nice way to say that this crop can withstand being drenched with herbicides in a way that would normally kill any other plant. So that's 5 out of 6 acres of GE crops worldwide. So, you know, when you hear this whole, like, necessary for a hungry world, these plants are not engineered for increased yield or anything like that. They're engineered so that you can apply herbicides indiscriminately.
Oh, that's and so that obviously has a, no, I don't even want to, you know, think about the implications of eating them ourselves, but the wildlife that is surrounding these crop, these fields, right?
Absolutely. In fact, we just submitted a petition several months ago for monarch butterflies to be listed under the Endangered Species Act because they're now threatened with extinction.
Oh.
And these are, you know, these are a magnificent species, numbering in the millions, a huge iconic part of everyone's childhood, really.
Yes.
And they're so important for us, and they, their number one threat is the use of glyphosate, which is the most commonly used herbicide in herbicide-tolerant crops. So monarch butterflies have experienced a 90% decline.
Whoa.
Wait
a minute. Did you just say 90%?
90, yeah.
That's crazy, right. And very upsetting. I mean, who doesn't love that analogy about the butterfly? You know, the whole thing. I mean, it's very meaningful, and they are just magnificent creatures.
They're
also pollinators, right?
To a very limited extent.
Okay.
Monarchs are not major pollinators, but some butterflies are. And actually, native bugs do a huge amount of pollination that we totally take for granted. We usually think about honeybees and those kinds of pollinators, but we don't think so much about the native pollinators and the services they provide us and the whole ecosystem. But the reason for the monarch decline is the widespread adoption of GE crops. And amongst other things, I'm not saying that a rough winter doesn't hurt the monarchs or things like that.
Right.
But so just on corn and soybean, the vast majority of corn and soybeans are genetically engineered for herbicide tolerance.
Yeah.
And they were, that technology was approved in the mid-90s. So in 1995, USDA said that total Roundup or glyphosate use on corn and soybeans was about 10 million pounds annually. In 2013, so less than 20 years later, the total Roundup use on those crops was 204 million pounds. So over a 20-fold increase.
Oh.
So that has massive impacts on all species.
Yeah.
Like the monarch butterflies that I just mentioned. And you know, monarchs are really iconic species, and it's really easy to see what's happening with them. But there are a lot of other species that are suffering significantly also as a result of this massive increase.
It must get into the water supplies and
absolutely
the water table and the soil?
Absolutely.
So does that mean, like, even, like, worms might be affected by this, and then the bird picks up the worm? I don't know. I'm just, like, kind
of... The cascading ecosystem effects are massive, yeah.
Oh, gosh. So what other wildlife, other than the monarch butterflies, like you said, which are kind of easy to see what's happening because it's very dramatic and they're very easy to see, I suppose. But what other things are being noted out there?
Well, some of the really important tiny species that make a whole ecosystem function are affected. For example, caddisflies, those tiny little flies that fish jump out of the water to eat, those are affected by glyphosate. From the big guys to the little ones. And glyphosate, or Roundup, as it's commercially called, is considered in the world of pesticides to be a somewhat benign pesticide.
Really?
It's not the worst one out there.
Oh.
And so that was why, you know, that was sort of the idea behind making these crops that we were resistant to it, was that we would use less worse pesticides. But I think this massive increase in glyphosate was certainly unforeseen. And one of the things that's happened as a result is that all these weeds have become resistant to glyphosate.
Right.
And have evolved this resistance. And so now farmers and land managers are forced to use increasingly toxic herbicides to manage the super weeds that have evolved to resist Roundup.
These
impacts are really well known. In fact, last year I submitted a petition on behalf of the Center for Food Safety, Center for Biological Diversity, and a number of other groups asking U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to ban the use of GE crops and bee-killing insecticides on the National Wildlife Refuge system because these impacts are so unacceptable and the refuges are created for the American people to as refuges for our wildlife. There's no other way to say it. They're refuges.
Right.
And actually, Fish and Wildlife went ahead and agreed with the petition and has taken action to ban GE crops on the National Wildlife Refuge system in recognition of the harm that they cause for all species.
Well, good job. I'm sure I signed it because I know this stuff really upsets me, and I get your newsletter, so.
Oh, great.
I'm sure I signed it, but is there any new action taking place that you want to tell our listeners about?
Oh, well, just yesterday we delivered 500,000 petitions to the White House asking them to take action on pollinators. So that was very exciting. And we're making good progress on getting monarchs protected, so there are always new opportunities coming up for that. We just had a comment period close a couple days ago. So definitely keep your eye out.
Good.
There are always things coming up. And the best way to get information on when a new opportunity to take action arises is to go to our website, www.biologicaldiversity.org. And you can sign up for our action alerts there.
And I know that there will be a post going along with this podcast, and you guys are great about sharing information so that we can make sure everybody knows what's going on and where to go.
That's right.
Thank you so much, Lorianne. I'm looking forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Green Divas Heart Wildlife. Please visit thegreendivas.com, that's T-H-E, greendivas.com, to learn more about wildlife, nature, and a whole lot more.
They are the stuff of legends, the origin of the myth of mermaids. Manatees, once endangered, have rebounded but face new threats. More on that after this.
Everyone wants to be a part of the green movement, and that's a great thing. Going green takes on a whole new meaning when you add tall grass beef to your family's dinner table. It's tender and juicy, and since the cattle graze on the natural grasslands of Kansas, it's also loaded with essential fatty acids and omega-3s that regular grain-fed beef lacks. It's good for you and your family, and good for the earth. For more information and to order Tallgrass Beef online, go to www.tallgrassbeef.com.
For years, the manatee took the brunt of human encroachment in Florida. Run over by powerboats, this 1,200-pound beast was given a chance to flourish under government protection. As their numbers increased, a tourism industry was born, giving people close-up access to manatees that raised awareness to the plight of the animals, but also created a new dilemma. Too many people and manatees in the same place. The more people who go on eco vacations for a swim with the manatees, the less room there is for the mammal to live its life in a natural way. There is a delicate balance in nature, and while much can be learned from swimming with these great beasts, sometimes tourism dollars don't always make sense. I'm Bill Curtis with Earth Matters.
Green Divas and Dudes are all about creating and supporting a healthy and earth-friendly economy. Listen to this segment to learn about one of our favorite Green Divas or Dudes in business, doing good for people and planet. This segment is sponsored by Shoplet, who plant a tree with every order through their Rooted in Change campaign. Shoplet.com. Well, this is a wonderful and special Green Divas business segment. We're going to be talking to Tony Ellison, who is the founder and CEO of Shoplet. And this is what I didn't know until we started to talk to them a bit. I didn't realize what a green business this is. And Shoplet is all about business supplies, right? And you're thinking, oh, yeah, uh-huh, business supplies. How green is that? They're killing trees left and right. But when you meet this guy and you listen to his business model and what he's doing, you're going to be impressed. Hi, Tony.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here and talking about how green we are and, more importantly, how we have started Shoplet and what we do for small and medium-sized businesses out there.
Well, and, you know, hey, let's face it, the Green Divas is a small, medium-sized business, and so we're definitely plugging in here and listening and paying attention. So tell us just what is Shoplet. Give us a little overview of what Shoplet is.
So Shoplet.com is the widest and largest selection of products for your business that includes over 1 million products. Wow. Where most of them could be green. And our goal from the get-go is to create a single-source environment from primarily small and medium-sized businesses. But if you're a consumer, we're not going to turn you back. We're going to service you just as well.
Yeah.
our goal is to provide you with larger selection, the best service, and a simple environment to transact from. And most importantly, and what this really topic is all about, is in a socially responsible way.
Yeah. I was impressed because when we, at first glance, we were like, okay, what is a, you know, what, why would we want to talk to, you know, a business supply company? And the number of products that you sell that are green and not just greenwashing, they're, you know, you've got some good products there. Tell us what that number is. It was astonishing.
So I do want to put it in perspective. We do sell quite a few green products. When we started back in 1994, I could only account for two products.
Right.
And when we embarked on the journey today, and it's not the end of it, we don't really think that that's really it.
Right.
I think this is only the beginning, and we are here all about making green products the standard. We carry today over 100,000 products. I'm proud to say that that's the largest selection of green products, not only in our industry, but any other industry that I know.
Yeah, 100,000 green products. I'm not even sure Staples, you know, who is like the Mahugga, you know, whatever, the Amazon of the business supply retail. I'm not even sure they can claim that.
Well, we have a tremendous amount of respect to Staples. I think their business model vastly differs from ours.
Yeah.
First, our DNA and theirs are different. We are socially responsible.
Well, that's big.
And I could really say that our emphasis from day one is to make green products a standard. While we happen to be operating in the same industry, we go to market differently.
Right.
Our DNA is online and servicing small and medium-sized businesses in a socially responsible way.
Well, and I think that is, you know, see, a lot of times when we talk to people about being green, we here at Green Divas are always thinking about all these different aspects, like the social responsibility, not just that it might be recycled or upcycled, you know, whatever, but that there are all these other aspects of it, whether, you know, is it fair trade? Are there people being fairly compensated? Is it socially responsible? And you all do a whole lot for your own business to really accommodate those things.
You know, I'm glad the way you introduced green. You know, there are so many different aspects of green. Yeah, you could really have a post-consumer content here, but you could really be responsible forestry, for instance. You could have an elements of eco-friendly. It could be so many different elements of green that we need to kind of start thinking about green in many different ways and shades, as it's not only one shade.
Right, exactly. So tell us, like, how you – well, I want to know why. Why did you want to do this business and do it from a socially responsible and sustainable, you know, business model?
So we came to this industry with fresh perspective while the Internet was taking off. If we remember 20 years ago, that's when we still had dial-ups.
Yeah.
And started, you know, trying different things until we came to – the office product industry, and we learned quite a few things. First, it's one of the largest industries, not only in the U.S., but in the world. And secondarily, it's one of the most offending industries in terms of the environment. When you think about paper goods and so many different products that are made out of non-recycled, non-eco-friendly products, it kind of amazed me why things could not be done differently. So the journey was, or the quest really began with, how can we make more green products?
Right.
It was almost impossible when you have an entire industry, second largest industry, in fact, in the country,
yeah,
is about to transact. Imagine this, going back to suppliers, asking them to make green products.
Right.
And not having any type of facts or data to convince them that there will be consumers out there that be buying them. At the same time, once you have green items, you have to go back to the consumers and really convince them that the quality and price points are going to be similar.
Right.
It was almost mission impossible. Sometimes I think of myself as Tom Cruise.
Dun, 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 dun.
Exactly so. So it's really amazing how widely received the message was. All we had to do is really build a simple business case. And once suppliers and manufacturers,
yep,
have seen the rapid adoption of green products.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the consumer sentiment has shifted from being, you know, the association with green products was always being dingy and less of a quality and more pricey items, and the one to the one that is really comparable. In fact, today we've done a lot of tests, and I'm willing to bet, if I set you down here in our testing labs, and I had given you two sheets of paper,
right,
you would not be able to tell the difference.
Yeah.
In fact, you would like the one that is more green.
Right.
And you'd be surprised that one of them is actually cheaper. Do you know which one it is?
I hope it's the green one.
Exactly so.
That's cool.
So that was really the purpose of our journey, and I'm glad to see us achieving 100,000 products, but that's not really yet. But, you know, I do want to hit the pause button here for a second and make a claim that we are not perfect.
Right.
You know, we're not really embody the perfect green company. We are just doing this in an incremental ways, in ways that we could find the wins, small or large, and introduce them and build this entire company break by break with the notion of being socially responsible.
Well, I mean, listen, we're the Green Divas, and I'm sure we're not perfect, and you know, nobody is. So I think it's just really important to understand, well, you know, you have a passion for it, but I think if more and more people understand the impact our businesses have on the planet and the actions that we take every day, whether it's, you know, the purchases we make or the travel we do, when we start to understand that, we can make changes and nobody's going to be perfect. I mean, you know, I fly, and that's like a very imperfect you know, carbon footprint for Green Diva, but, you know, it's easier than walking or even driving to Chicago, you know.
I agree. I mean, and that was really our vision. I mean, we couldn't really become perfect overnight. And even the challenges that we had, for instance, you know, having an office leases in downtown Manhattan and convincing our management building to start recycling, that in itself was a much bigger challenge than I thought it was.
Well, so, and it's still, and by the way, that still is. There's a lot of people that still don't recycle.
I completely agree, and it's beyond me. I don't understand.
Seems simple enough, right?
Yes, it does.
So,
I mean, when you put it in perspective, we should all be doing our fair share.
Now, so if you were going to say to, because you know, your customer base is really small to medium businesses, and if you were going to say to your customers and our audience, which is probably comprised of a lot of your customers, what are like the top three things you would recommend they do to begin if they aren't a totally sustainable business, and very few are, what would you talk about to make it easy to transition to being a more sustainable business?
Great question, but first I do want to thank for all your customers that already are Shoplet customers, and I want to welcome all the non-Shoplet customers to try us.
Yeah.
The things that they could really start to become ingrained is very simple as far as I'm concerned. For instance, let me tell you what we've done for the past 20 years. We realized that by educating and raising awareness to the customer is really key. So on Shoplet, when you come and search for items, and let's say you've happened to enter a paper that is non-green, at a point of purchase, which is at the shopping cart, we will offer you a green equivalent.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, thank you. So you don't really need to do much. We made it effortless to migrate all your non-green to green equivalents that are available.
I'd forgotten that you guys have that brilliant capacity in, you know, built into your whatever program platform you use for your e-commerce.
Thank you.
When you go to check out, like, bang, wait a minute, what about this? You can, you know, get a greener product and save or whatever. And, yeah, that was actually really cool when I was goofing around on your site.
Thank you. So that's one of the many things that we do. The second thing that we do, you know, some customers really would like to find out, all right, so you ended up buying the green paper. What does it really mean? And I think up until we came up with this idea, there was no quantification in terms of, all right, I just made a purchase. It would be nice to report back to the customer in the most direct and measurable way what the green purchase was. But, you know, when you think about one person buying green might not mean a whole lot.
Yeah.
So we started aggregating this over many years. And guess what? I'm so proud to say that for the past 20 years, Shoplet managed to save over 100,020 trees. Let me put it in perspective.
Wow, that's like a forest right there. That's a forest.
Well, let me give you an idea. That's exactly the point. On average, a forest has 5,000 trees. That's a definition.
Wow.
So we managed to save 24 forests.
Whoa.
Now, when you put it in perspective, a firefighter will be lucky to save one forest in his lifetime.
Wow.
Can you imagine the credit my employees would take when they are 85 and over, and they're sitting on a rocking chair and telling their grandchildren what they did at Shoplet?
That's great stuff. Well, we have to wrap up for now. Obviously, we could talk for hours about and learn from you about how you have created a more sustainable business and through your passion are offering for any business to become more sustainable, more conscious.
Before we go, I do want to kick off a campaign that just started a couple of days ago, which, you know, we do seek to be green in many different ways. And we actually just recently had kicked the following campaign, Rooted in Change, we call it. And it means that for every order you place on Shoplet, we're going to plant a tree on your behalf in places that need the most. So remember, for every order that you save 15 to 45% over our competition, we're going to go ahead and plant a tree on your behalf.
Well, why wouldn't...
And we hope that in a very short period of time, we'll be able to plant over a million trees.
Wow. Like, why wouldn't people do that? Like, so I'm doing that. You know, I got to get some paper or whatever, some supplies. I'm planting some trees, saving some money, having fun.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to share our great achievements. And we're looking forward to welcoming all the new customers who are currently listening.
Yeah, you got to go to Shoplet. And that's shoplet.com. Go there, do some good shopping for your business, and build more forests. Thanks so much, Tony.
Thank you so much, Megan. Thank you so much for everybody.
This segment is sponsored by Shoplet, who plant a tree with every order through their Rooted in Change campaign. Shoplet.com. To learn more about this Green Divas and Dudes in Business segment, and find even more about low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green, please visit thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com.
The Green Divas get to talk to so many inspiring people, who each in their own way is helping us find a deeper shade of green. Here's just one of them. Enjoy.
All right. So, you know, you think you're recycling, right? Like, you're like, oh, I recycle. I'm doing my job. But, you know, there's actually a lot of people that not only don't recycle, they may not recycle properly. And even for those of us who are trying to recycle properly, there's still a lot of confusion just out in the world. Have you ever been somewhere and you're like, wait a minute, there's like six bins and I don't know, what is this, compostable? Is this recycle? Anyway, the wonderful Mitch Hedlund, and Mitch is not a guy. She's a beautiful, powerful woman who is executive director of Recycle Across America, and she's on a mission with Recycle Across America to help create standards so that across America, anywhere you go, it'll be really easy to recycle, whether it's in your community or if you're out in the town, from your home, whatever. They've got some great ideas. Hi, Mitch.
Hi, Megan.
It's great to talk to you finally. And I love, love, love the campaigns you're running. Tell us a bit about Recycle Across America.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for the intro. I mean, actually, after you've introduced it that way, there's not much left to say. because that's it in a nutshell. I mean, we are all loving the idea of recycling in theory. I think as a society, we completely understand that it's time to start reusing these materials and get them back in the hands of manufacturers to reprocess from. And there's just so many environmental and economic benefits from recycling if it's done properly.
Yeah.
And right now there is just, historically, there's been so much confusion about recycling, and much of it has to do with the way it's presented to society in general.
Right.
And what you said in the intro is so right. I mean, how many of us have walked up to a bin in an airport or at a school or at your office and felt that moment of recycling stupidity?
And, recycle panic, and, yeah.
Yeah, and we think it's just us. We think at that moment we're just confused, and then we toss whatever we have in the bin and we hope it's the right bin and hope that the miracles behind the bin kind of take care of our mistakes.
Right.
And, it's not working as a punchline. I mean, the recycling is not working very well in the U.S. because of the confusion and the contamination.
You know, your site is fabulous, and it's recycleacrossamerica.org, And I would encourage people to go there because you can see what you're up to there in helping create standards, but you also can see a lot of facts. And we talk about these facts from time to time, and they're always stunning. But you had a couple of wild ones that, you know, I love how and you know, you do this, you illustrate this like phenomenally large number by saying it's, you know, the equivalent of, right? So like, here's one. What was the one about the paper, office paper, that annually office paper that is thrown into landfills every year, piled up together could create a, 12-foot high wall from New York to Seattle every year?
Right, every year, and that's so disturbing. I mean, it's actually kind of hard to get your mind around because the facts and the stats are so atrocious.
Yeah.
One that I think that is so interesting, and I'll put it to kind of a sense of purpose, because sometimes we're recycling and we're not really sure what are these materials becoming in their next life.
Right,
plastic bottles, for instance. We are all villains of drinking water from plastic bottles.
Help it. I mean, like if you go to the airport, you can't bring your bottle with you. You can't. You have to buy whatever they have in there or dehydrate.
Right, right. And so when we're doing that, we're doing it to great extremes. So right now in the U.S., I think the number has gone up since the stat, that 2.5 million plastic bottles every hour in the U.S. go to the landfill.
Wait a minute. That's like, that should be maybe an annual number and it's bad, but an hour?
An hour. An hour. And it's just so, so disturbing. But this is what's even more disturbing, is we're not connecting the dots.
Yeah.
And again, when recycling isn't working well, we're not capturing these materials that are highly valuable. So
right.
You have a company like Shaw, which is a carpet manufacturer, one of the largest in the world, and they manufacture much of their carpet, or they try to these days, using plastic bottles.
Yeah.
And there's a huge economic and environmental benefit to doing that. But often they're having to ship up plastic bottles from South America and other countries because ours are going into the landfill.
Oh, my God, that's so upsetting. I can't even tell you. I have to say that I have one of my favorite computer bags is made from it's RBPET or whatever, the material from plastic bottles, and it's beautiful, but yeah, I mean, come on.
Right. So there's the need, there's the demand, but the materials are not getting into the recycling bin. And if they are, they're often highly contaminated with a dirty diaper or a left shoe or a half-eaten hot dog or a hypodermic needle. And all of that garbage that's going into the recycling stream is absolutely destroying the economics of recycling.
Right.
And down the line, manufacturers who truly want to start using recycled content in their manufacturing can't choose recyclables because often the price is driven up so high just trying to pull out all of the contamination.
That is not cool.
No, it's not. And it's not the general public's fault. They have not been, it has not been made easy for them to be able to recycle properly. And that's what the standardized labels is all about. And it's making a huge difference. So,
you know, I had an interesting conversation once. I was trying to live without plastic for a month. I think it was Rodale or they put out the Plastic Free February challenge, and I, you know, was like, oh, I can do that. I don't like plastic. Where you don't buy any new plastic. Well, first of all, it's impossible. It's not going to happen. And you become acutely aware of the plastic in our everyday life, and some of it is necessary. It's part of the technology that's helping us innovate, right? It's, you know, I'm talking, you know, my computer, this microphone, they're things involved that couldn't do without plastic. So anyway, I talked to Jurjan Kamp, who was the publisher of Ode magazine. Now it's called The Intelligent Optimist. And we were talking about this because I was bemoaning the fact that, you know, I sucked at, you know, not using plastic. And he said, you know, why don't we start thinking about plastic as a resource? You know, if we treated it like a resource, you know, we're going to make plastic. It's just not going to stop in this lifetime, in this generation. So why don't we think of it as a resource and like you say, be careful to capture it, reuse it, because it's a wonderful resource to reuse. There's a lot of wonderful products you can make from plastic bottles and recyclable plastic. But we have to kind of get on board with how to do that.
Right. Absolutely. And that's, you know, there, in an ideal world, it would be wonderful to do it without a lot of these materials and products. But we need them. As you said, they bring safety. They bring all sorts of things. And they're not going away. So if that is the case, then let's make sure that we are finding a way to constantly reuse that resource, just as you've described.
Well, it really is about intelligent resourcefulness, you know, or whatever.
Right. It really is. And to understand that right now the other resources, the finite resources, are at risk. I mean, we're dealing in a bad math situation where we've got exponential increase in population and huge amount of production of food and resources often that isn't even getting used. But when it is used, it's getting discarded. And that's that one-way street doesn't work when you have finite resources and you have an exponential demand for them. So it's really, it's just smart. It's common sense. I mean, one of the analogies we use is what would happen if in society every intersection had a different looking stop sign? You know, what would road safety be like?
Yeah.
And introducing a standardized stop sign everywhere you go so that you know how to, what to do when you come to intersections makes sense. Well, if recycling is the top thing that we can do for the environment and a huge benefit to the economy, then we need to apply that logic to it as well. We can't have it where we're relying on the general public to do the right thing, and yet everywhere they go, it looks completely different.
Now, you mentioned
often isn't effective.
Sorry for interrupting. You mentioned the economy, and I saw some statistics on your site, or one in particular, which is not retained properly, but it was about how many jobs we can create by really fully realizing the manufacturer, you know, all the things we can do with recycled materials.
Right. So right now, and I can't remember what it's either 4 or 7 jobs for recycling versus 1 job for landfill. So if we, for instance, get recycling up, right now it's about 34.5% nationally. It was 34.7%, and it's starting to slip, which is really scary.
Yeah.
And the reason that that's happening is because the contamination issue is so prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to address that. But if we get to 75% in the U.S. for recycling levels, it will create 1.5 million new jobs net.
Wow.
And it will be the CO2 equivalent of removing 50 million cars off the road each year in the U.S. And there is nothing that is within our reach, within our direct reach right now where the infrastructure exists, you've got society on board. There's nothing that has that powerful dual impact as fixing recycling.
No, and it's like we're right there on the edge. And, you know, like you and I and a lot of the people we encounter in our lives are really into it and want to do it right and all that. But there's still a lot of folks who are like, oh, it's just too hard. You know, and so I think the awareness, the statistics, and the campaigns that you have with some of the celebrities you've been working with, I think really help.
Absolutely. And I think that's you just hit it on the head. You know, there's, when it's confusing, first of all, there's a perception that maybe it's not that important.
Right.
There's a perception that maybe it's all going to the landfill anyway.
Yeah.
And so our campaign, and thanks to the donated time and effort and voices and influence of the celebs, is huge because they are bringing awareness to the issue of recycling on a national level with the Let's Recycle Right campaign. And instead of just telling the general public, let's recycle right, we're also, and with the celebs' help, introducing the standardized labels. So, you know, you can't really go out and wave your finger at the society saying, start recycling right, without giving them any tools to be able to do that. So the power of the celebs' faces and influence to be able to deliver the message of why recycling is important, why recycling right is critical, and also introducing the solution has been amazing. I mean, it's been such a gift for us that they've been willing to do that, and it's making a big difference. Bank of America never knew about our organization or about the standardized labels, and one of the senior VPs who is very involved with the global sustainability for Bank of America ended up seeing one of the Angie Harmon ads in a great, great magazine called Boston Commons. And next thing you know, they're rolling out the standardized labels throughout all 5,000 locations.
Wow.
And now they're donating standardized labels to all the schools in Orlando.
Wow.
So, you know, people might say, do we really need celebs to talk about these
things?
Thank
you, Angie.
Yeah.
She's so cool. I love her.
Isn't she amazing? She was so fun for the photo shoot, too. She's just been, they've all been remarkable. It's really made a huge difference.
Well, I love talking to you and all the work you're doing, but I do hope that you'll hook us up with a couple of quick celeb call-ins so we can help further the cause.
Yeah, I will definitely see what we can do. You know, their time is precious.
I know.
They seem to be pretty passionate about this subject, so we can always knock on their door and see.
Well, you and I will have to schedule another time to talk again, because there's even more stuff that you're doing, and we appreciate it. And Earth Day is coming, and I don't know when this may or may not air before Earth Day, but either way, thank you for the work you're doing, and we'll look forward to talking again soon.
Oh, my pleasure, Megan. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Thing that I could ask the audience, if they can look at their school or their workplace, their employer, their home even. And if they're not recycling, to take that on and introduce the idea of recycling to their organization, their school, their business. And if they are recycling or if they're about to start a recycling program, if they would take a look at the standardized labels and see if they can be part of this Let's Recycle Right movement by using the labels on their bins. That's the takeaway from this, is if people can start to recycle more, but also introduce the standardized labels to their workplace or schools.
Well, you're making it easier for folks, so let's do it. It's kind of a no-brainer. It's pretty low stress. Thank you again.
Great. Thank you so much, Megan. Take care.
Hope you enjoyed that as much as they did. Please visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. For more fun podcasts and information on the Green Divas and low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green.
You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Show. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes, Swell Radio, and Spreaker. Get social with the Green Divas on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Subscribe to the Green Divas YouTube channel to watch them in action. And for all the latest good green news, visit thegreendivas.com. That's THEGreenDivas.com.